Chapter 23. Viewed from the standpoint of a sane and ambitious social order, it is difficult to understand, and it would be tedious to follow, the motives that plunged mankind into the war that fills the histories of the middle decades of the 20th century. It must always be remembered that the political structure of the world at that time was everywhere extraordinarily behind the collective intelligence. That is the central fact of that history. For 200 years there had been no great changes in political or legal methods and pretensions. The utmost change had been a certain shifting of boundaries and slight readjustment of procedure, while in nearly every other aspect of life there had been fundamental revolutions, gigantic releases, and an enormous enlargement of scope and outlook. The absurdities of courts and the indignities of representative parliamentary government, coupled with the opening of vast fields of opportunity in other directions, had withdrawn the best intelligences more and more from public affairs. The ostensible governments of the world in the 20th century were following in the wake of the ostensible religions. They were ceasing to command the services of any but second-rate men. After the middle of the 18th century there are no more great ecclesiastics upon the world's memory, after the opening of the 20th no more statesmen. Everywhere one finds an energetic, ambitious, short-sighted, commonplace type in the seats of authority, blind to the new possibilities and litigiously reliant upon the traditions of the past. Perhaps the most dangerous of those outworn traditions were the boundaries of the various sovereign states, apostrophe and the conception of a general predominance in human affairs on the part of some one particular state. The memory of the empires of Rome and Alexander squatted, an unlaid carnivorous ghost, in the human imagination. It bored into the human brain like some grisly parasite, and filled it with disordered thoughts and violent impulses. For more than a century the French system exhausted its vitality in belligerent convulsions, and then the infection passed to the German-speaking peoples who were the heart and center of Europe, and from them onward to the Slavs. Later ages were to store and neglect the vast insane literature of this obsession, the intricate treaties, the secret agreements, the infinite knowingness of the political writer, the cunning refusals to accept plain facts, the strategic devices, the tactical maneuvers, the records of mobilizations and counter-mobilizations. It ceased to be credible, almost as soon as it ceased to happen, but in the very dawn of the New Age their state craftsmen sat with their historical candles burning, and, in spite of strange new reflections and unfamiliar lights and shadows, still wrangling and planning, to rearrange the maps of Europe and the world. It was to become a matter for subtle inquiry how far the millions of men and women outside the world of these specialists sympathized and agreed with their portentous activities. One school of psychologists inclined to minimize this participation, but the balance of evidence goes to show that there were massive responses to these suggestions of the belligerent schemer. Primitive man had been a fiercely combative animal. Innumerable generations had passed their lives in tribal warfare, and the weight of tradition, the example of history, the ideals of loyalty and devotion fell in easily enough with the incitements of the international mischief maker. The political ideas of the common man were picked up haphazard. There was practically nothing in such education as he was given that was ever intended to fit him for citizenship as such. That conception only appeared, indeed, with the development of modern state ideas, and it was therefore a comparatively easy matter to fill his vacant mind with the sounds and fury of exasperated suspicion and national aggression. For example, Barnett describes the London crowd as noisily patriotic, when presently his battalion came up from the depot to London, to entrain for the French frontier. He tells of children and women, and lads and old men cheering and shouting, of the streets and rows hung with the flags of the Allied powers, of a real enthusiasm even among the destitute and unemployed. The Labor Bureau were now partially transformed into enrollment offices, and were centers of oddly patriotic excitement. At every convenient place upon the line on either side of the Channel Tunnel there were enthusiastic spectators, and the feeling in the regiment, if a little stiffened and darkened by grim anticipations, was nonetheless warlike. But all this emotion was the fickle emotion of minds without established ideas. It was with most of them, Barnett says, as it was with himself, a natural response to collective movement, and to martial sounds and colors, and the exhilarating challenge of vague dangers. And people had been so long oppressed by the threat of and preparation for war, that its arrival came with an effect of positive relief. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.